Thank you very much indeed, and thank you to the Foundation for organising this discussion and bringing together such an extraordinary group to have this conversation this evening. I confess I'm slightly intimidated that my good friend Sir Brian Bender, former Permanent Secretary of the Department for Business, or whatever it was called then, it's had so many names, it's hard to remember, seems to be marking my homework here, but I'll do my best. This is a timely conversation because we are actually at an early stage in setting up this organisation. In fact, the organisation is currently just me, 2 days a week. We are at a well-advanced stage in appointing chief executive of this organisation. We will be interviewing shortly. And that is a very critical appointment because that person will be the brains of the operation. They will be the person shaping it and taking it on its journey until it actually comes into legal existence, subject to the will of Parliament, from April 2018. That's the point at which UKRI starts, as it were, using live ammunition, starts making real decisions in the real world. And I think the point I'd make is just that having this discussion this evening does allow us to explore some of these issues, you know, before any of the concrete is, as it were, set. I was asked to talk about my vision for the organisation, and I find it hard to do that without starting with the external context, because I think the nature of the role I was asked to perform has actually changed quite fundamentally because of external events. When I was asked to take on this job, we were in a more placid environment. I was asked to do this by a man called George Osborne. I don't know if anyone remembers him. And pretty soon after I agreed to do it, we had the Brexit vote, and then we had, to all intents and purposes, a complete change of government, which I think reshaped the task that I was asked to perform from one which was, in a sense, the technocratic one, a very important one, but a technocratic one of, you know, how to turn the vision of Paul Nurse's report to the government into some sort of reality. What it brought front and centre was part of Paul's vision, which was that UKRI should be, for the first time, an organisation in this country, a potentially prominent organisation, that can act actually as an advocate, as a champion of what we're all trying to do here. And I was presented with circumstances in which I had to take that on, you know, rather sooner than I had anticipated, because, you know, I think we should be honest with ourselves that those who care about particularly, well, science and, I would say, innovation in this country have had the good fortune to have had really two powerful chancellors who have passionately bought into what I think we're trying to do here, in the form of George Osborne and before that Gordon Brown, who through pretty much 20 years had invested in this area and protected it because they believed in it. And my the point at which the change of political leadership occurred, it seemed to me that we could not afford to take remotely for granted that a government led by Theresa May and Philip Hammond, you know, would necessarily buy into this or be willing to put the same priority on it. And so immediately, you know, I began a series of discussions working with colleagues in the business department with key people, number 10, the Treasury and so on, just to make sure that we got in right at the beginning with what I think is an incredibly powerful argument. And the argument is very simply this, that as we need to think about this country's economic future as an independent country outside the European Union, we need to think very, very hard about what our economic future is going to be, how we shape it. And to have an intelligent conversation about that, you need to start with an honest account of what we're good at as a country, what our opportunities are. And when you do that in an objective way, the fact is that the extraordinary strength of the British science base, the extraordinary strength of British universities, and in some areas, the extraordinary strength of innovation in business is very high on the list. And that was the simple argument that I began running. Now, I have to say, we're now, whatever it is, 4 months on, something like that, I do feel a degree of confidence that the government gets this argument. And why do I say that? First of all, the conversations I've been having inside government with colleagues and former colleagues have actually been really encouraging. I think the argument is absolutely winnable and understood. I was encouraged by a number of things the Prime Minister has personally said. I was very encouraged by Philip Hammond's party conference speech, where he had like a whole page on science and innovation. He didn't need to say a word about science and innovation if he didn't want to, but he chose to, and he chose to put some money into one or two things, which was absolutely encouraging. And as of now, you know, there are still lively conversations running in the context of the autumn statement. I would certainly love to see science and innovation actively prioritised in the autumn statement. I'm not in any position to tell you anything because I don't know anything. There are very active conversations going on about that, as there should be. And we haven't been thrown out of the room yet, so we'll see. There may be no money for anything, but if there is, I certainly think that science and innovation has a real claim to be right up there in terms of what this country should be thinking about prioritising in the circumstances in which we find ourselves. Now, there are also a set of questions about setting up this organisation, and I'm quite clear that this is something we could either do well or do badly, like most things in life, and I do have some views about how we should go about that. As I say, I think the chief executive will be the driving intellectual force of this, but actually the candidates that I have been talking to about this, I think, see the issues pretty much as I do, which is encouraging. And I think the sort of fundamentals of that are clear. If you go back to Paul Nurse's report, I think we do have to be clear that he does not in any sense describe a broken system. He pinpoints some functions which are not currently being performed, which could be performed, that he thought that UKRI should perform. But in order to get from here to there, you do not need to throw everything up in the air. You do not need to construct some enormous, great, new kind of British National Science Foundation. And if I may just sort of slightly quibble with Lord Selborne's terminology, I actually slightly balk at the language of merger and creating a single organisation. I mean, legally, in one sense, that is what we are doing. But I don't think it should feel like that. I don't want it to feel like that. And actually, if you look at the bill, that's not really what is implicit in the bill. Actually, what is implicit in the bill is that we spend essentially $6 billion a year through 9 different organisations. And what is suggested is 2 things. First of all, that we should make further progress in bringing together and finding efficiencies between these organisations on what, you know, for want of a better phrase, you might think of as back office functions, and that is a continuing challenge. And I think more fundamentally, that there's a role for a small body, and I underline the word small, that can sit over the 9 funding bodies and act in the sort of analogy I've found helpful in this, as a shareholder, a challenging shareholder, I hope. That will advise ministers on setting the budgets for the 9 organisations, that will advise ministers on the appointments of the heads of those 9 organisations, and that therefore should be and can be held accountable for the effectiveness of those organisations and indeed for the sense of strategy across the system. And I think that is essentially Paul Nurse's challenge. I think it's a very fair challenge, and I think it's a challenge that we can meet. But in order to meet it, we need to do it in the right spirit. We need to be very, very precise and clear thinking about what the new bit of the organisation is there to do and what it's not there to do. And I think it would be a disaster if we went into this thinking that the sort of end game here was a single kind of massive funding council for, as it were, the whole of science innovation in the UK. And I think it would also be a big mistake to set up anything that would be a large bureaucracy of second-guessing. Part of the problem in this area is that, it's also interesting that you could quite easily, employ hundreds of people going around, going to conferences and writing interesting papers. But I'm not sure you would make the world a better place. So I am a bit obsessed with keeping what we're thinking of as the little strategic team around the chief executive, really small and high quality and focused on, quite lean in terms of thinking about what it's there to do and not to do. I did want to say something before I run out of time about Innovate UK, because Paul Nurse left the government a choice, which was should Innovate UK be inside the new structure or outside? And Phil will, I'm sure, want to talk about this. When the and Paul Nurse essentially left that question open and left it for the government to decide, and the government decided, I think, from, in my opinion, quite rightly, that we would be better to put Innovate UK in. And I think that did cause some unease in the world that cares about Innovate UK and its mission. And I can understand that. And I think there were two kinds of unease. One was that if you put Innovate UK in, then somehow the scientists, who are very clever people, would manage to steal the money. That was the first worry, I think. And the second worry was, I think, a subtler worry that Innovate UK clearly has a different culture, a different mission, a different customer base from the research councils or HEFCE, and that that might be something that would be lost in the new structure, and that somehow Innovate UK would morph into being something more like the sort of technology transfer arm of the research councils, as it were, at the disposal of the research councils, something that was focused much more than at present on translation of academic research into commercial opportunity. Now, there's nothing wrong with translation of commercial research into economic opportunity, but that is not the Innovate UK's core function. Now, I think I do get all of those things. I think we need to make sure that the bill does protect all those things. I think there are important protections in the bill, but I think there are probably other suggestions that people have, which I think ministers will be very up for looking at with an open mind. But the reason I think that it is right to put it in is really twofold. I mean, first of all, the world is simply not cleanly divided between the pure pursuit of knowledge in universities at one end and exciting innovation in companies at the other. Actually, there is a huge and very interesting and very important terrain in between, terrain that I think Innovate UK is already active in, sometimes in collaboration with the research councils. But actually, the research councils themselves are also increasingly active in that terrain, and all of that is good. And I would argue that having a body that can have oversight of that complex and interesting and important ecology is a good thing. The second reason is that I actually do think that Innovate UK really brings something to the party precisely because it has a different culture and a different window on the world. And I see that in real life because we have regular meetings of the Research Council heads, which Ruth McKernan now comes to. And she does have a different perspective, and she brings a degree of challenge. And I think that's an unequivocally healthy thing. And I do think with Innovate UK in, this body will have a more naturally outward-looking perspective than it might otherwise have, and I personally believe that's a good thing. In parenthesis, I would also say I firmly believe that I can win a funding argument for a UK RI much more easily than I can win one, theoretically, for a UK R without the I. And I do think that, in a sense, to send the signal that says, well, innovation is this funny thing that sort of happens over there somewhere in biz, would actually be a big backward step for those who care about this area. Now, I've probably overrun my time, but I want to leave with a couple of questions. I was asked to leave you with questions that I would find it helpful to have the answers to, and my questions are these. First of all, one of the biggest problems I think we're going to have is that with my little lean organisation, we are going to have to pick and choose what we focus on. And there is a danger that the whole world will think, well, this is a body that's in charge of UK research and innovation. It's there to answer any question, to have views on any, and the list of issues that we could potentially engage in or focus on is huge and possibly infinite. And we are going to have to make some choices about what we do focus on, particularly in the early stages. So I would be very interested in views about how we think about those choices. And the other thing is, at the heart of Paul Nurse's review is this idea that it would be healthy for there to be more of a strategic perspective across the system, including across to making sure that the most exciting interdisciplinary areas get attention. One of the things I'm very keen to do is to learn from others around the world who do think about these things, and I'd be really, I suspect in the heads of people around this room, there is a lot of knowledge about and interesting thoughts about how one might go about that, and I'd be very interested in views and perspectives on that. So at that point, I think I'll hand over to Julia.
Very Thank you.